Welcome to Your Financial Advocate with Greg DuPont from DuPont Wealth Solutions. As a practicing advisor and attorney, Greg teaches pre-retirees how to reduce debt and taxes and save with less risk so they have more spendable income and plan their way to a better life. Join us for this journey where Greg draws on years of experience and guest experts to help listeners achieve more spendable income for retirement.
Today, we have a special guest, Taylor Vick, who is founder and managing director at Blue Ridge Asset Management. And Greg's going to tell you who Taylor is, what he does, and the whole nine yards. Greg, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Taylor, welcome.
Thank you.
Let me say a couple of good words about you before we get started, before you have to actually say anything. So, folks, I wanted to bring Taylor on to our conversation here today. We've talked a lot about the foundation of Wealth Solutions Network and what the mission is. And the core part of the mission is to bring to the consumer exactly what they need for where they are in their life, not worrying about any type of industry biases or anything like that. And I've gotten to know Taylor for the last couple of years through Strategic Coach. As I've talked about before, I'm a member of that program and found it to be incredibly helpful in my journey. Taylor is actually taking it up to the next level, up to their next higher practice level, and I'm looking forward to joining them up there in a year or so. But as I've gotten to know Taylor, I've gotten to know the power of kind of these small syndication of real estate deals. And so Taylor's his titles as asset management, his company, but typically when you're in this universe and you're hearing somebody saying they're asset managers, well, they're stockbrokers, right? Or financial advisors, quote unquote. Well, Taylor is a true financial advisor from the sense that, he provides guidance and advice with regard to a different asset class. An asset class that most consumers don't know about, and most middle and upper middle class consumers can really benefit from knowing more about. So I've invited Taylor on today to talk to us a little bit about real estate as an asset class. And so Taylor, welcome and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with me here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
It's my pleasure. And, we've had a lot of conversations privately, and I hope to kind of pull some of them out into the open here. In a nutshell, why don't we just start with, I've given the background, but in your own words, tell the listeners what it is that you do at Blue Ridge and how you're able to bring real estate investing to the consumer in a format that many just don't know exists.
Sure. Yeah. So kind of the short story is I was working in banking and finance, and I'm, maybe overeducated in finance. I've done a lot of studies and degrees, and I was actually a finance professor at Clemson University. And I was looking for a way to live off my investments. And what I discovered is all the investments available to me, the only way to do that was basically to work my whole life, which was the opposite of what I wanted to do. So I started looking more into real estate and found that it was really the pathway for people to be able to create wealth, grow wealth, and have a steady income. So what I do now is I try to bring that to individuals. I try to bring them those unique investment opportunities that they may not be able to find otherwise. Because, like I said, I'm very educated in finance. I did a lot of very specific studying in real estate. I did a lot of cold calling, dialing, networking, all that thing to find these deals that the average person, if they're working their job or spending time with their family, don't have time to do. So since I've got that skill set, my vision is to bring that to other people. With a traditional financial advisor, they're probably not going to give you a lot of specific information on real estate or even direct you to it. And the power of real estate is immense, multi-generational. It is the reason why all high net worth individuals, ultra high net worth individuals, billionaires own real estate because of all the amazing investment facets it has.
There historically has been no more proven method to accumulate wealth than the investment in real estate. And I want to make it clear to the listener that, what we're talking about is not the what Taylor does and for his clients, it's not the people that are buying and flipping and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, the get rich quick kind of methods of using real estate. Although those are, can be for people, it can be very powerful, but it takes a lot of work. And I'm sure Taylor's got stories about that. But what my understanding of what Taylor does is kind of gives another path to real estate. Okay. If you go to your financial advisor, quote unquote, they may sell you a REIT, a real estate investment trust, or funds that are invested in real estate, those kind of things. That's one path that people typically have exposure to real estate. Second path that people typically have exposure to real estate is, well, they are building their own real estate portfolio. And they are maybe the landlord, maybe they've got enough properties that they are property, they own, they've got property managers that come in and take care of things for them. Mm-hmm. But for many people, they have recognized that these, their tax advantages and their cash flow advantages and all that stuff, but they don't want to dive into that business. And my understanding is that's where firms like Taylor's kind of fit in for the consumer. So, Taylor, am I on the right path there?
I think so. I think, you know, kind of the key differentiation is you've got REITs, right, which those give you exposure to the asset class, but they don't really give you direct ownership. And then you have kind of what you mentioned, maybe you're the landlord and you have direct ownership, but that means you've got to do everything yourself, and you probably have a job or whatever, so you don't know the best way to maximize it. So I'm kind of, you know, in the middle of those two things where I give individuals direct ownership in the real estate. So they are a partner in the ownership of the real estate. They get the tax advantages, et cetera. However, they don't have to do any of the management. So even if you own real estate and you have a property manager, you still have to do things like make sure the property taxes are paid, arrange financing, make decisions on buy, sell, rehab, et cetera, come up with the investment thesis for the asset. All of those things, you know, the property manager can't do. That's what an asset manager does. So typically with a typical investor, what's going to happen is I either have an investment fund set up or I have a specific investment set up where individuals can come in and be an investor in that. So it may be an apartment complex where you could make a small investment in, or it could be a fund, which is going to be essentially a series of investments into a specific asset class, giving you more diversity across more assets.
So when you're speaking of asset class in that context, mm-hmm. I presume what we're talking about is a subset of real estate. So it's a consumer, a residential lease versus commercial lease and that type of stuff. Am I correct on that?
That's right. Yep. So, you know, asset class is our sector. Sometimes you will hear used, but, you know, kind of the main ones are residential. You've got industrial, retail, office. Those are some of your major asset types, asset classes in real estate.
Now, when people invest in a real estate project through services like yours, that's not a very liquid investment, correct?
That's right. Yep. And that's one of the main things we go over with investors, is it's going to be much less liquid. So you can't sell it on a daily basis, not even close. Typically, we're going to give a horizon of the investment, the hold period or the lockup period is generally anywhere from 2 to 7 years. There can be other liquidity events to get out early, but that typically is going to mean you're not going to realize the full value of the investment. So these are for, you know, a little bit more sophisticated investors who are okay having money locked up for a period of time, understanding that it is going to give them possibly a better return and possibly, you know, all those better advantages of real estate versus something that could be a little bit more liquid.
And do people have the ability to invest in this through self-directed IRAs and things like that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the main avenues through which people invest. As Greg, a self-directed IRA or you know, any type of retirement account can essentially invest in almost anything, not anything, but, you know, very famously, Mitt Romney, I can't remember how much money he had in his retirement account, but it was a astronomical sum versus how much you can actually put in annually. But it's because he was investing in private equity deals and like racehorses and, you know, you can do precious metals. So, yeah, self-directed IRAs are one of the main ways people invest. And, you know, generally we're going to direct them to a few specific, what are called custodians. Custodians are just the people who kind of like hold your money, so to speak. A lot of the big firms won't let you truly self-direct. They may call it self-directing, but it just means you can pick your stocks. But there are firms that are specialized to help you invest in non-traditional assets, such as real estate or precious metals or what have you.
So strategically, I look at the self-directed component of this. If somebody's looking for something outside of the traditional stock market type world for their IRAs, and looking for long-term capital appreciation and the growth just be the income just kind of being in the portfolio and reinvested. And that's one class. But then you mentioned earlier on in our conversation that the people are actually direct owners in some of the structures that you have. And that has another tax profile that can be beneficial. How about if you share that with the audience?
Yeah, so the things, the aspects of real estate in regards to taxes are very good. When you invest through self-directed or something like that, you're already in kind of a tax shelter vehicle, so you may not be able to fully utilize those. But if you're not, there's a lot of great advantages. And one thing that we do is work with individuals to look at, hey, what is your overall investment portfolio? What is your estate plan? What is kind of your long-term investment horizon to craft something that really works for them as far as, you know, the returns and the risk profile, but also those tax advantages. So one of the main ones, one of the most famous ones is depreciation. So depreciation is essentially where the IRS says every year we'll let you have a small tax write-off based on the value of the real estate that you purchased. So the great thing about this is, one, it lowers your taxes in the current year. And then it does something that I call tax transformation, where when you do eventually have to pay those taxes through what's called depreciation recapture, it's in a different tax treatment. It's in a capital gains type tax treatment that's commonly called depreciation recapture. So you're writing off at your marginal tax bracket. So, you know, whatever your marginal tax bracket is, that's the tax break you're getting. But when you do pay those taxes back, you're paying them at a lower rate, probably something like 25%. So you get the deferral, which allows you to, you know, not have to pay those taxes currently. So you can do other investing or other things with those dollars. And then when they are due, you're paying a much lower rate than you would otherwise. That's one of the more famous ones. And that can really be maximized through various strategies. So we can purchase assets that are highly depreciable or highly deductible. And what I mean by that is that you can accelerate the depreciation. So a commercial building has to be depreciated over 39 years. However, through the tax code, we can tell the IRS, hey, yeah, maybe the building structure is a 39-year depreciation, but the HVAC is only 10 years. Or that doorknob, I mean, that's not even depreciable. That's just an expense. So we're able to go in through what's called a cost segregation study, look at every element of the building. An engineer actually does this in conjunction with a CPA and say, hey, some of this can be written off as an expense, which is even more powerful than depreciation, because you're paying, when you sell, you'll be paying a 15% capital gains or 20% capital gains versus 25% on depreciation recapture. Or, hey, we can bonus depreciate this over 1 year and get all the write-off today. So a common tax strategy that you'll see is that someone will buy real estate every year. They'll do one of these cost segregation studies and they'll have these tax losses. So maybe this year they have enough tax losses, or excuse me, maybe this year they don't necessarily need the tax losses, but you can bank those and take them forward. So a strategy a lot of people do is they will consistently purchase property, do a cost segregation study. And I encourage people who are maybe looking to sell a business or something like that to do this, because you start building up those passive losses so that when you sell your company, you've already built up a bunch of write-offs against the capital gains you're going to have to pay on your company. So it's a powerful tool for things like that. And, you know, even some other aspects that make it very powerful are things like the 1031 exchange. So depreciation and 1031 exchange are probably the two most powerful and most famous tax strategies with real estate. The 1031 exchange allows you to sell a property and purchase another property and not pay the capital gains or depreciation recapture taxes at that time. It allows you to defer those taxes into the future. So you can do these, combine these two strategies. You can do a cost segregation study, purchase multiple properties, build up all these losses. Maybe then you sell a company, you build up these losses, you offset all of those gains from that company, and then you continue to own that real estate, or you sell it all, do a 1031 exchange, and purchase another piece of real estate. And then, you know, the way to totally get out of the taxes, so to speak, is to die. So as you know, Greg, there's something in the tax code called step-up basis. So you can use these tax strategies your entire life, build up these losses, offset gains, purchase bigger and better real estate without paying taxes on the sale of the previous real estate used to fund the new purchase. And then through your estate planning, it can be passed on to your heirs, who can sell it with no tax penalty, or keep it with, you know, an adjusted basis. So, you know, and I could go on and on, and I guess we probably will. That's kind of the point of why we're here. But there are so many great tax strategies with real estate. And because of the way the financial advisory world is structured, where most financial advisors really just do kind of stocks and bonds, people don't really know about this. Or if they know about this, they don't know how to implement these strategies, because it is sophisticated and is difficult. And real estate is what we call lumpy, meaning you can't, you know, usually can't put $1 into it. If you're going to buy a building on your own, you may be putting in $500,000. So that's where companies like mine come in, Blue Ridge Asset Management, where we've got all this knowledge, we know all these strategies, and we're pulling together multiple investors so you can get in more of a bite-sized chunk, and you can implement these strategies for yourself without having to do it all individually or having to have the knowledge yourself. You get all the advantages of direct ownership with professional management.
So a couple things triggered from that, your conversation there. First, so if somebody is looking for the cost segregation deduction benefit, tax benefit, mm-hmm. Is that like you've got a certain you say, okay, wait, we're building this project, or we're investing in this group of buildings, and this is going to be our cost aggregation vehicle for now, and so people can buy into that one, and then you have other types. You've got one maybe that's, you know, growth oriented type of investment. Is that kind of how your models work?
So each one has a different strategy, which we call, you know, the investment thesis. So when we are looking at an asset, we are saying, how do we maximize value with this asset? Because at the end of the day, investing is about achieving your personal goals, not your financial goals are there to achieve your personal goals, which for most people is to, you know, work less or to have more free time or to spend more time with their families. So we're buying real estate to help people spend more time with their families. It's essentially what we're doing. So with that, we want to maximize value, which generally means, you know, we're buying real estate to make money so that we can have more time with our families. So how do we maximize this value to give us the most time with our families is one way that I think about it. So each asset is going to have its own investment thesis. And then if we have a client who, you know, these are typically going to be ultra high net worth individuals or family offices who have the ability to purchase a lot of real estate on their own, or maybe with a small group of investors, we will tailor a strategy specific to them. So if we have someone who says, hey, I would like to invest $5 million in real estate. We would then get with them and their financial advisor and their CPA and their estate attorney and put that plan together. So if it was one where we wanted to build up tax losses, we would create a portfolio and identify assets that are specifically advantaged for the cost segregation study for the best tax benefits. Now, there's other types where we're looking to maximize the dollars. So if we're looking to maximize the amount of dollars someone gets in a short period of time, so if we're saying, let's get as many dollars as we can in 2 years, the tax strategies are going to be less less important, because with that short time period, you are going to be paying depreciation recapture or capital gains in a couple of years. So it's very project dependent, and it really comes down to each individual's goals and how we pick and choose assets around that.
So when it comes down to an individual goal, so let's say we got somebody that has been building a little portfolio of rental properties, and they're now approaching retirement and no longer, like you said, they want to have their money support their life and not have that problem anymore. Or it's become a problem for them, and they don't want to go to money to a property manager, or whatever, and they want to do exchanging. So, is that some situation where your team can come up with a portfolio that they can do that 1031 exchange, as you mentioned up before, and remove themselves from the world of being at risk as the owner, landlord / property manager?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few things we could do. I mean, we could come in and be the asset manager. So if the person says, I want to keep these assets, and we, you know, through consultation, you know, that's what everyone decides on, we'll say, okay, well, we will kind of step into your shoes as landlord. You're still the owner, but we will do everything for that needs to be done for these properties. We'll do, you know, approving leases. We'll do the tax return. Or we will work with your CPA to get them what they need for the tax return. We'll do the tax planning with the CPA. We'll handle, you know, lender relationships if that's there, et cetera. So that would just be kind of, we come in and we are the asset manager for the existing assets. But then we can also facilitate a 1031 exchange, which in a scenario like that would probably be the correct thing to do. If someone's built up rental properties over many years, they've probably gone up in value a good bit, and that would give them the opportunity to sell those at the higher value, not have to pay taxes at that time, and purchase higher quality assets that are going to fit better into their estate plan. So that is absolutely something we facilitate. And we can also do that and get them more diversified. So we can do a 1031 exchange, and we can get them into maybe a partnership or something of that nature. It's a little bit more complicated thing to do, but, you know, at certain levels, it really makes sense to do that as well.
Yeah, when we were talking in Chicago last time we met, you had an insight into the current marketplace and the interest rates.
Yeah.
To me, was an interesting take on it, spin on it, because I was, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid that, hey, you can't make deals in real estate in this market because the rates are so high. And you kind of spun that on its head a little bit on me. And I'll go ahead and have you share that from your own mouth as opposed to me trying to paraphrase that.
Of course, yeah.
Because it's your insight, my friend. I'm going to let you be the genius with
it. Yeah. So, you know, yes, interest rates are higher right now. Sellers haven't come off their selling price as much because it's been such a short period of time where rates have been higher. So that's kind of compressed yields on the buy side. However, if you can go out there now, which is, you know, a lot of what my firm is doing, and you can find some singles and some doubles. So if you can find a deal that's good at a 7% interest rate and rates drop to 4% and we can refinance it, that's now a grand slam. So now is an excellent time to pick up real estate at a slightly depressed value because rates have pushed values down some in most asset classes. And if you can make the deal work at a 7%, man, if you can refinance it at 4%, it is going to be on fire. So that's a lot of what our strategies are now. We're looking at, hey, you know, we've purchased assets this year. We're going to continue purchasing assets. Let's come up with, you know, three different plans, you know, plan one, refinance after stabilization. And stabilization is if we're fixing a property up, once we fix it up and we've got it full of tenants. Refinance at stabilization. So at stabilization, the value's higher because the property's been improved and it's fully leased, so it's got better cash flow. And then at stabilization, rates may have gone down over that time period. You know, option two would be to sell at stabilization. So with kind of same philosophy there, the value's higher now that we fixed it up. And if rates drop, buyers are going to be willing to pay a higher price. And then option three, you know, hold on to it, enjoy collecting the cash flow of this newly stabilized asset and reevaluate, you know, these plans on a regular basis. So that's kind of what we're doing now. And I think people who just decided to sit on the sidelines are going to be saying, man, if I had bought something this past year and I refinanced it, that would be a real grand slam right now.
I got to imagine that the market for commercial real estate is on the buyer side is fairly strong. And if you combine making the deal cash flow appropriately at 7.5 with maybe having some cost segregation opportunities there for tax deduction in the near term, then you can reposition yourself pretty strongly for the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely can. And I think a lot of times, you know, I'll relate things back to single family homes because that's what people are most familiar with. So single family homes have continued to increase in value for the most part in strong markets and markets of population growth. So where I am in Greenville, South Carolina, home price appreciation over the past year has been about 5%. So it's been about 5% where mortgage rates have been, you know, 7 to 8%. So if home values are going up 5% where interest rates are 7.5%, if rates drop to 4 or 4.5%, imagine how much the home values are going to increase then. So it would make sense if you can buy some single family homes and rent them and make a decent yield, that when rates drop, you're going to have a great opportunity to sell because most likely prices will go up or refinance and have better cash flow.
So we're going to wrap up in a second. I'm going to invite Matt back on because he's my fly on the wall. I always like to get his questions that have been percolating in the back of his mind as he's been listening to our conversation because I get so drawn in. But, you know, I know that you've got a bit of a passion. You got a real passion about real estate, but a secondary passion you shared with me with regard to estate planning.
Yes.
And, you know, this March to Million podcast goes out to my network of estate planning attorneys. And so, Taylor, you have an open forum with a group of estate planning attorneys that have decided that they want to take the position in their clients' lives as a leader and a guide. And if there are a couple of things that you could just say to them that you'd love to say to them so that they can have this kind of on their checklist of things that I may not have thought about before, but if I do this, I could really improve somebody's life.
Yes.
What would you like to share with them on that line?
I think a lot of things we mentioned, they probably already know or are familiar with, step up basis, things like that. I think one of the great strategies I've seen done, you know, a lot of family offices I've seen do this is with their generation skipping trusts and other like true estate tax planning type tools, they may purchase or even gift real estate into a trust that has the opportunity to grow immensely. So, and this is a little bit outside of my field. That's why we have awesome people like you and your network. But the gift tax or the gift exemptions around, I think, $33,000 a year per person or something like that. Is that right, Greg?
We'll roll with it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So if you've got that and say you buy a piece of real estate that doesn't have a lot of value or maybe it does have a lot of value right now, you can gift a percentage ownership of that. And the IRS does allow you to do that at a discount to what the full value is, since a partial ownership is not as valuable as a full ownership. So you can gift ownership in, you know, $33,000 chunks or whatever is appropriate to, for the gifting exemption into this over time. So you could put a very valuable piece of real estate do it through the gift tax exemption, and it has something that has the ability to increase in value a lot over time. So you're giving that generation a very, very valuable asset, and you're taking it out of your estate to avoid those estate taxes. So I would say that's kind of, you know, the main thing I try to encourage people to think about in the estate planning is how do we get real estate involved in the trusts out of your estate so that it can grow significantly.
Thanks for sharing that. So Matt, my fly on the wall. Oh, one more question, Taylor. If somebody wanted to come out and work with you, kind of what's the kind of the entry level parameters and those type of things, and how would they get a hold of you? Because I know that's what Matt's going to ask, and I took his thunder.
Yeah. Best thing, you know, email or phone call is always good. Text message is great too in this world. My phone number is 864-915-8719. And my favorite thing about my job is talking to people. So always happy to talk, and text is a great way to get a hold of me. Parameters, you know, our lowest investment amount is usually about $50,000. So something that's very achievable to get all these great advantages of direct real estate ownership.
Well, Taylor, one of the things that you said early on, which I absolutely love, real estate is the way that most people secure long-term multi-generational wealth. And I like to, and I've helped advisors sell real estate investment trusts in real estate in general. And I just have people talk about Monopoly. How do you win Monopoly? Well, you own the most properties.
You buy everything, right?
Now, from a compliance standpoint, we're not going to say buy it all. But that's how you win Monopoly. And how cool is it to be able to have a conversation like this? Because the whole idea to this March to a Million, and with what Greg has created with this Wealth Solutions Network, is to teach estate planning attorneys other ways to really truly engage their clients to help them have better financial life, a better legacy, more products and services to offer to have a really much deeper relationship. And the conversations can't happen without the real estate conversation. So Taylor, this was awesome, dude. I had a whole bunch of fun listening to you. I know the audience will. We'll make sure that we have your phone number and email address into the show notes so that people can reach out. But really, you should probably reach out to Greg, because we don't want to be giving everybody Taylor's phone number. We really do have a great guest today. So for Greg and Taylor, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Thank you for listening to Your Financial Advocate. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of DuPont Wealth Solutions. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning.